We're up to 9th and King to start at the Miller, Nathan Miller building. We'll go slowly for Boyishka, they say. And if anybody, we're going too fast, let us know, all right? If anybody knows any more than I do, please tell us, because I, what I don't know, I usually make up sometimes.
We're going to a different guy, right?
Yeah, okay.
We're going to serve refreshments in a minute.
Wish I had a green umbrella. And over here was the store of Nathan Miller. It was called Miller Brothers, but Nathan Miller was the entrepreneur. And he sold furniture. And he amused everybody by saying, Mr. Miller stands behind every bed. That would amuse everybody. The thing about Nathan Miller was he came here as a young boy, and he had stores downtown. And he gradually worked his way up here. And around 1913, he figured this was the place for business up here. But he needed some money. So he went to the Wilmington Trust Company, which is a big bank, and he said he needed some money to build this thing here, and they looked at him. And they say, Mr. Miller, you know, a war started in Europe, and we don't know what the future's going to be. And Mr. Miller looked them in the eyes, these big bankers, and says, look, gentlemen, if we get into a war, and the United States goes down the drain, you and me and everybody else is going down. He said, I've got great faith in the United States. And they won over by that argument, and they gave him the money. And he built this fantastic store here. And then he was one of the early Jews who broke out from the Jewish community into the general community. He became very effective in the State Park Commission. He became very much interested in parks. And he was one of the early ones. He and David Snellenberg and I.B. Finkelstein were among the pioneers, and Mr. Miller was himself. And he became one of the leading citizens, and this was the earliest Jewish store that came up this far. And now they've moved out into the country, and now they're building this place here for a family court. But I always was fascinated by Nathan Miller, who was very active in the Jewish community, and had the audacity and the courage and the foresight to move from about 2nd and 3rd Market up here. And
about
1914, when we just got into the war. And he convinced these pessimistic bankers that if anything happened to the United States, we'll all go down the drain. And they were very much touched with his faith and his optimism, and he established his store, and it was taken on by his sons and now by his grandsons. He's also active in the development of Brandywine Raceway. But I had great contact with him when he was in the Park Commission. And he very much interested in land preservation and conservation of natural resources. So now from here, we're going up to 9th and Market, where those people are. Then we'll slowly walk down the mall, and we'll go to 7th Street, which was a very important pivotal place there. Okay?
Just tell me what your name is.
Sid Horowitz is my name. My dad's name is Lewis Horowitz. And the synagogue didn't even have the key to the synagogue for Yuntin. And my dad went out with one of the Topkuses to collect, and they collected a nut so that they could get the key back and get the synagogue open for Yuntin. I thought of that when
Which
he...
Which synagogue?
Adiskovich.
Adiskovich. Yeah. Do you know about what year that was?
No, frankly, I don't. My dad came over about 1907. But it was, I'd say, a few years after that, somewhere in through there,
yeah.
Right.
Get reminiscences, and we're reminded that Mr. Zutz had a store out on West 10th Street, right.
The site of the present Brandywine building. Yeah. And, he knew DuPont would move in that direction.
And Harry Zutz had a still office, and he looks down where his father was.
Both the Zutz brothers had stores opposite one another, next door to one another for 50 years. And then when Harry moved his office, he made sure that first of all, the Baptist church across the street had anti-Semitic sayings on it constantly. So Harry wanted to make sure that he had some part of that building.
The Baptist church, the Delaware Avenue Baptist Church, was not on Pennsylvania Avenue, was there. And every year they have a convert come. Harry Applebaum was his name.
Oh, yes.
Remember. And he'd make more money in a week. I think one time the Jewish Federation figured he was raking in $40,000 a week. And so the question came up before the Jewish Federation and the Community Relations Council, what should we do about it? And Mr. Coder suggested, and Mr. Kutz suggested nothing. But they went to the Council of Churches and told them what this character was doing. He had a big beard, and he spoke with an accent. And every once in a while, I used to go listen to him, every once in a while he'd throw Yiddish in, and that impressed the living daylights out of the Gentiles. The guy was speaking holy language. So instead of having a big confrontation in the press, in the public, they just told the Council of Churches what was happening, and all of a sudden, Mr. Appleman never came back.
Right.
But it was a kind of an anti-Semitic atmosphere there. And then
really got a religious one. They really got a religious one in their camp.
I remember the minister there took me out to lunch with Appleman one time, and he began talking Yiddish to me, and this impressed the minister, because we were talking the great so-called sacred language of Jesus. We were awfully impressed. Anyway, finally the church moved on out to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
I guess they've changed their attitude in those days. Yeah. There wasn't too much anti-Semitism in Wilmington as such. You go back and read the early newspapers, 1889. They have the most detailed accounts of weddings. But they're always written by Goyish reporters. For example, one reporter wrote about the Fupa, C-U-P-A. And he says this was David Topkis and Ray Topkis's wedding. And he spoke about the men kept their hats on all during the ceremony and the dinner, as is the custom of Jews for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And then they spoke about breaking the glass. That was amazing to them, about breaking the glass. Then they had the newspapers had a great deal of details about circumcision. They described it in detail. We were a strange people to them. The trouble, the thing was, why we didn't get into trouble here, because we were not, the Jews were not in the competition with the Irish or the workers. Blacks were blacks, they knew their place. The Irish were the workers here. The Italians who came here got into trouble, because they were workers. And the Wilmington City Council one time passed a law in 1890 that no public contract should employ Italians. But with the Jews, they were not in competition with anybody. They had their stores down on Market Street, and they were peddlers. As this Mr. Topkis you heard today was a good coppersmith, but he actually had a peddle. I go from here to Newcastle, actually literally peddling. And finally they developed and got out of it. But the atmosphere here was always good. The only time there was a bad atmosphere here was in the 1920s when the Ku Klux Klan was here. And once in a while, on Easter, it was always rough for Jews. I used to go to school near St. Mary's, and often I was chased by little Catholic kids who called me Christ killer.
Yeah.
My mother would pass St. Mary's. But later on, it all kind of disappeared. But it wasn't as bad as the attitude towards blacks or even about the Poles. Now, over here, this bank was always here. But over here, where it says Carl Kovitz, was an old movie house. And Mr. Rosenbaum had a toy store there.
Yes, sir.
And the Covenant Club met upstairs.
And on Sunday night, they had dances, and all the boys and girls
I think the Covenant Club met up there.
B'nai B'rith had
our kids.
And AZA used to be
there. AZA
I think Bogdanov had a knitting thing in the back of my father's office upstairs.
Really? Bernie Kreschel's father had an office up there.
And in that Covenant Club on Sunday nights for 50 cents, they had all the Jewish boys and girls at dances.
That's where they had the gambling up there.
832, wherever that is. 832.
Let me tell you something about gambling. I think it was up there.
Yeah.
When Hy Young was elected Attorney General, they say that Jews have two diseases, diabetes and gambling, like Greeks. When Hy Young became Attorney General, the story goes, he served notice on the Brandywine Country Club to get rid of the slot machines. There just wasn't going to be any of that craziness they can attack on, so they got rid of them. But then we have the gambling up here, I guess cars. I never knew what they were.
Covenant Club rented their quarters to B'nai B'rith.
B'nai B'rith, okay.
Louder.
It was a Covenant Club that created a club for themselves. They rented their quarters to B'nai B'rith. Then B'nai B'rith bought their building up near the church at 900 Washington Street.
Covenant Club was owned by a man named Mike Brown.
That's right. It was up B'nai B'rith.
Was he the man who had the restaurant?
That's right.
Yeah.
I can remember when I came to town that game operated up there on 900
That's where
Washington.
They were.
I remember going up there and it was quarter ante, and that was too much for me. Yeah.
But before that, there was a movie house here called Victoria.
Right.
Where you can see the Pearls of Pauline and the Clutching Hand.
Oh, now, where was that? Right
here. Right over here, yeah.
Major's Bridge was right here, too. Right.
If anybody remembers any landmarks, I'll talk out.
There was a Garrick
at
Theater,
Bill.
Here it is, right over here.
Yeah. And at 6th and Market, there was a movie house called The Majestic.
Joe Lebowski.
Joe Lebowski, yes.
Joe.
It just hit me who you
Joe,
were. Do you remember Francis Murray?
Of the Garrick Theater. This was a clean vaudeville house. And Mr. Doc Stater, who ran it, he screened all the shows before they went on. So that it was a real family show. And later on, they had meetings here. And Maxa Nordau, who was the daughter of the famous Zionist, came here at a Zionist rally in 1926. Now, and then, of course, this theater here was a rival of the Grand Opera House, which is over here. Someone asked me about whether any Nazi, there was a brief outbreak of Nazism here in 1938, and it centered in the German Hall down on 6th Street. And it didn't last too long. Now, Wilmington had a great German population, so large and influential, they had maybe four or five breweries here. Stokel's, the Fehrenbach Brewery, and they had a newspaper, a daily newspaper, which I think was once edited by a Jew back in 1880, and they had their printing shop at 7th and Tatnall Streets. But generally speaking, there was very little anti-Semitism, but that briefly, in 1938, there's a brief by one fellow who was, and later when we got into the war, he suddenly was taken away to some camp or somewhere, but it didn't last too long.
Right.
Who's in charge of weather here?
What was the name of this?
Bernie Kreshtel.
Yeah.
Where was your father's office?
Right over Leroy's. It used to be Rich's Drugstore. You know, Gladys Zutz, Rich Zutz.
Right.
Her father.
And
that was
on the second
floor. Two brothers
floor.
Had the drugstore. Second floor.
The opera house was built
and Mrs.
by the
Bagdanov
in
had the knitting shop
and
behind there,
the,
which all the women would bring
their theater in Wilmington. The first one, which we'll see later at the 3rd and King, was the Oddfellows Hall, later the YMHA.
Up there.
The Up at the Opera House. This was a Masonic temple. And Tony Young has written a very fascinating story